perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm a very relieved Andy.
Oh, my God. Look, there are a number of emotions. Yeah, we have so much time for round one to get nervous about it, to imagine what can go wrong. And look, there's the track record. You know, it's fair enough that we've got some emotional baggage, but it's also such a relief when we get over the top.
Yeah, I know. Like, in hindsight, I'm thinking, well, if I'd known Warnock wasn't playing and Daisy was going to get injured in the first 2 minutes and Yaron was going to hurt himself midway through the third, I probably wouldn't have been worried. But it doesn't matter. Like, once you're there and you're nervous. I was even nervous watching the replay. And it's just so – it just sets up your whole season to win round one. It's so important to do so, even though I thought I was – it was quite painful in the last podcast, Nick, how much emotional hedging I did just in case we lost. It's a huge relief now that we have one.
I know. To my shame, I tipped against this as a form of emotional hedging.
Yeah, to be frank, I make an investment on the other side for the same reason. But yeah, look. It was, and Nick, in many ways it was a fascinating game. Like, if it was a practice game, I would be quite excited about it because it wasn't the usual suspects.
No, it wasn't. And I sort of mentioned it to you after the game, but this was a game that a French economist could love.
Yeah, what's his name?
He's done a book on the decline of the middle class. Well, this was one game where the Richmond middle class came to play.
Yep, that's right. The middle class won the game. The elite of the social strata were amongst our mediocre, and the bottom of our list, the bottom one or two players, gave us absolutely nothing. This was a victory for the middle class, and
it was.
And I'm really going to enjoy going through some of the individual performances from this game.
Well, we tweeted it out before, but it's the very first time that Chimp, Dusty and Lids have never, at least one of them hasn't got 20 disposals in a game before.
And that reason is so exciting to me because I must admit, before the season I was having a bit of a crisis of confidence about what is it we're going to do to get better this year. Because I can't, you know, the preseason hype about, oh, Dusty's going to be even better this year, that's sort of crap. Like, generally players don't, at Dusty's age, and they're really good players already, they generally don't, like, they might play a little bit better, but generally they don't. So I was sort of trying hard to convince myself of that. And what we needed was some of the mid-tier players to become sort of your 6 out of 10 players to become 7 out and a half and 8 out of 10 players. And there was a hint today that some players are taking a step up and other players who were previously 3 out of 10 players are becoming 7 out of 10 players. So from that perspective about the long-term implications of this game, it's really quite exciting.
Oh, look, there was a lot to like, frankly, up forward, down back, and in the midfield.
Yeah, and it was an interesting one. Before we start talking about individuals, the fact that we lost the contested possession and the clearances and still won is sort of unusual for Richmond. And we won properly. Like, we didn't dominate them, but we, you know, we won the inside 50s. We won the possessions. It was a clear victory, and it was done in a slightly un-Richmond way.
Well, the most un-Richmond aspect about it was that we had so much more run than they did, and actually we had 39 bounces in the course of a game, which is a bit of a funny stat, but last year we averaged around 10. Port Adelaide, best team in the league for bounces last year, they averaged about 15. We never had more than 22 in a single game last year, and we've ripped out 39. And I think it was some of the new faces that helped give us a lot of run.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, credit credit to the coaching staff too, though. I know Chaplin very early on the game went for a long run, and I think that they scouted the fact that Carlton, because if you watch Carlton, they dropped off the man. They don't run at the man. They tag a lot, which created a lot of spaces for the running bouncer. I think we were coached up for that because we were very early on, we were looking for it. And, you know, it was very obvious that Hunt and McIntosh had the ability to do it, but, you know, other players were doing it too, as I mentioned, Chaplin. So I think we were looking for it early on. I think it was a tactical ploy.
Yeah, and, well, just while you're mentioning Chapman, one of my notes was that it was good that after he started both of his first two seasons in Richmond a bit physically out of sorts, he actually looked in, you know, mid-season form, thankfully.
Yeah, he did have a few Troy Chapman moments, unfortunately, as well. But
always does, but he was part of a pretty dominating defence.
He was, and that's one of the things that really that won the game tactically was the sort of our ability to turn the ball, our half back line's ability to turn the ball over through, you know, Carlton's ball movement was very predictable down the wing, and, you know, that's a characteristic of Mickey Malthouse coaching, but normally he manages to make it work. But our back line, you know, him, Vlossie, Rance, Grimes to a lesser extent, but they're all sort of extremely good at cutting off their forward movements.
Well, we mentioned about our middle-class footballers, and look, there are many favourites amongst them for this game, but Vlossie, I really enjoyed Vlossie's game.
Yeah, I agree, like, and that's a good place to start on the individuals. I loved his... I love that he had 8 intercept possessions, and it just seemed like he was Mr. Sheen cleaning up kicks across the, not just the half back line, but you know, across the ground. And he just was so effective in that sweeper role.
Yeah, and he was dominating the contest. I just love that. You know, the ball's coming, not only neutralizes the contest, but he was winning it most of the time. It was a really good effort. I think
before we go off him, can I just, he had 90% disposal effectiveness, which is, you know, I mean, it's a good stat, but it shouldn't be just seen in isolation. But to the eye, I'm starting to think he's the most effective user on the team. What do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. I'll have to think about that. Bashir Hawley is a nice kick.
He is, and unlike Bashir gets yards with his feet as well as with the football, but just as a pure kick, he you know, I was thinking he reminds me of a rich man's Newman in his prime.
You know, different, with the intercept marks. Different type of player. Newman was quicker, whereas Vlossie is more physically dominating. That's true.
He's a better contestant.
That's the most fun part about it.
But I think his kicking's improved. I think it's just got that extra 5 minutes of meters of penetration. I just thought he was great on the weekend with his kicking. Like, he didn't hit every target, but it was long and to constructive places. I really loved his game.
Well, speaking of kicking, I had a moment of cognitive dissonance watching Camden McIntosh on the weekend.
This is the Shane Tark.
I've seen him play before, including in the VFL, but I suppose it was just at the MCG. But the Shane Tark resemblance, and he's, you know, in height and weight and, you know, physicality, there's certainly some similarities. And But and being a little bit awkward as well. But the kicking is, he's a much more direct kick than Shane Tark. Like, there's no chance of knocking down passing aircraft with his kicks.
In fairness, we should remember Shane Tark basically never got outside of his kicks. Like, he spent his whole career kicking balls with two guys hanging off him and needing to thump it quickly. But,
thump it he could, but it was high, long, and handsome. Whereas McIntosh has got good power in his kick, but he also showed a nice ability to take a bit off it as well. That he was able to hit Jack on the chest after five bounces. That's a pretty decent skill.
It's very hard to do. Actually, I was impressed in general. I didn't think his kicking was as good as that. Like, he's got, there was one moment where he's thumping it down the wing, and he kept it just inside. Yeah. It's a kick that that Rhys Conker perpetually puts out on the full. It's just, like, he has the strength, and I know you're not comparing him to Tuck, but when, like, his kicking for goal reminds me a bit of Shane Tuck's. It's very straight. Yeah. There's something about him that, yeah, I agree. Like, overall, I was just really impressed with his kicking. It was better than I thought. And, he's not a good disposer. He's not a good traffic player.
No. But out on the MCG wing, very happy to see him out there. And, again, he's certainly, you don't have to worry about him, as a matchup if his, man rotates into the forward line. Like, he's quite comfortable defensively as well.
Yeah, that's true. But it's the thing about, you don't have to be a great defender under pressure if you're fast enough and good enough runner to find space.
I know. We've got to talk about that goal in the second quarter.
Well, do you mean other than the fact you beat Judd in a one-on-one, exploded away just like Judd's done a million times to a million opponents, and kicked a beautiful goal? What more needs to be said? God, it was good, though.
God, it was good.
It was such a big moment in the match.
I know. And just, I put in my notes, actually, because you can tell, firstly, the Judd's had a good preseason. Like, he was moving around fine.
He looked good.
Yeah, he looked good, but he's lost a step. He just lacks that extra. What made him great was, you know, that he read the play bell. But he could also burst away from a pack shedding tackles, and he's lost that extra 10% that, you know, helped him burst through tackles. Like, our guys were bringing him to the ground when he tried to take them on.
Yeah, you might remember Edwards ran him down beautifully. And actually, 5 minutes after McIntosh beat Judd for that goal, he did it again. Not that he beat him for a goal, but he beat him in another one-on-one situation and ran away from him.
Mm. Good times.
Speaking, while we're on newcomers, what did you think of Hunt's game?
Oh, very nice. Very nice. So he was one disposal away from his career high. It's very workmanlike. Like, it was, for me, it was a bit of a relief, actually, that it's potentially the... We've got somebody to fill that Dan Jackson role in the team.
Potentially. It was a really clever game. I do wonder whether it's sustainable, whether it was just a product of the fact that Carlton put a lot of work into your best players and create space for others. But it was very credible. He was very good around the packs. He was good when we're in trouble in the first quarter. He sort of gets smart little in-between touches. He was good. I mean, I do wonder whether he was partly responsible for the fact we weren't very good at clearances.
I wondered that was because a lot of our gun footballers, like Dusty, spent a fair bit of time in the middle and he wasn't getting a lot done.
No, that is fair. I did notice that. I presume there was one spectacular Joe clearance where he just burnt Dusty. That may be the case. That's a fair call. And we'll have to see. We'll have to see how the clearance stats work out over a longer time. But yeah, I mean, you can't be happier with his debut. And it's like the addition of Miles last year. It's just so important to bat deep in your midfield. And is it harsh to say that Hunt's sort of like, you know, he's sort of taken that fourth field, fifth midfield spot from Conker, and Conker will get a spot back in the 22, but I think he's gone past Hunt, Conker pretty quickly as a player.
Oh, look, let's give him both a month of football, but it was very encouraging. Like, having Hunt in the team, McIntosh in the team, like, it just added, like, they're both near elite runners. Like, we just felt like the whole team was quicker over the park.
Now, Nick, there was we had talked offline a bit. There's some people about who was best on ground and how it was slightly hard to pick. By the way, statistically, according to champion data, it's Ellis, but and we'll talk about him in a second. But Nick, who did you have genuine best on ground? Because for me, I think you're going to be surprised by who I choose.
It's one of those really tough ones, because it's actually one where I think I prefer the age footballer of the year voting, where you can give four guys seven votes, than when you have to arbitrarily do three, two, and one. I don't know.
Well, let me put you out of
some, your some excited people put McIntosh for three votes, and I can almost see that, except maybe for the fact he only had one disposal in the last quarter. But yeah, I don't know.
So he was the third best player according to champion data. Mm. My best player was actually someone who didn't rank that high, was Edwards.
I did think about Sheds. Yeah.
I thought he was brilliant. Yeah. 15 contested possessions.
Which is a lot.
7 clearances and 9 score involvements, which is a lot for a high half forward, and I think it was 3 or 4 assists. I just thought he was just so important in the... And I'm sort of, as you know, I'm on a... For the last sort of 12 months, I'm on a Shane Edwards bandwagon. Mm. And, you know, I've stopped complaining about the fact that he physically seems incapable of getting more than 23 possessions and just appreciating for what he is, because he just gets touches in the hardest parts of the grounds in that half-forward place, and he creates clearances that leads to goals. And he also... Look... You know, his pressure acts, for all the hype about Morris's pressure acts, Edwards had the same amount as Morris. I love the way he's playing footy at the moment.
Yeah, he was clearly our best clearance winner, and normally with Sheds you can expect at least one head scratching error, but it just felt like it was really consistently creative work, and particularly got us going in those second and third quarters.
By the way, his 15 contested possessions, the next highest Richmond player had 8.
Well, it's the same for clearances as well. He's got 7 clearances, and the next best is Big Ivy with 4.
Now, Nick, I can tell already this is going to be a long podcast, because we're discussing so many things in loving detail. But what do you think of Sammy Lloyd's game?
Liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it a lot. His seven marks was easily a career high for him. And you know who, and I think the fitness has really helped him of doing 2 AFL pre-seasons. And you know, this is going to be unpopular, but do you know who he reminds me of?
Oh, no, who?
Pettifer.
Interesting. Pettifer was, you know, you remember Pettifer was a first-round draft pick. Like he was explosive on a lead the way that Lloyd isn't. Lloyd.
No, that's true.
Lloyd is—he's a fun footballer.
But he just—he takes intelligent small man marks around the half forward line.
He does. It was a nice game. Like he, that goal from around 50 was very well taken. I liked the that there was some criticism for not having Jack at full forward, but I actually quite liked the look with him at centre half forward and Griff at full forward and sort of Lloyd rotating through. I thought it was unpredictable and hard to defend.
We were quite efficient in the first quarter in that setup. And my favourite goal of the game was the first goal, which you might recall Grimes got intercepted in the back 50, switched it to Lloyd, who took a really clever mark on a difficult angle, who hand-passed over to Hawley, who, like he did all game, burst through the centre, and then kicked long to Griffo, who took a nice high mark, high pointed the ball and converted. I loved it, A, from the fact that, you know, that those names, I haven't mentioned Leeds, Cochin, Martin, but it was beautiful football.
Mm. It does say something that Griff's in his 6th season of AFL football, and he's just kicked his career high with 3 goals.
Yeah, and yet we're all ecstatic with that.
Oh,
game.
Yeah.
Again?
No. Team, count me in Team Griff. I thought he played well.
God, he's a fantastic athlete. When he high points the ball with, he gets so high even with no assistance on some of those marks. And again, he did a nice physical act. And one of my favourite things he did all game was the stiff arm, which set up another goal with Edward. I think it was Greg's goal when we were on a run.
Yeah, that was nice. I enjoyed both of Greg's goals, not almost as much as he did.
Yeah. Oh, look, as we were in the preseason, I'm very much on the Sean Green bandwagon. Like, it wasn't as good. Like, I only had four contested possessions, but he gets to clever places on half forward when he's not playing in the midfield.
Did you notice after the second quarter goal, that after he kicked it and was celebrating, Simon White pointed at the scoreboard, which I checked and it was only showing Carlton by 3 points and on the verge of being overrun. I thought that.
I did wonder whether either he was screaming at Simon White, or I thought he was actually screaming at the cheer squad and Simon White was pointing to one of his teammates, so I'm not sure about that. But I can see why. You may be right. That's maybe one of his. I interpret it differently, though. I didn't mind Bachelor's Game.
No, I had him in mind. Look, it's a long list of heroes in this one, but
we are taking a long time, aren't we?
But again, Sammy Lloyd at 14 disposals a game and 7 marks. Take that every week. Same Jake Batchelor at 15 disposals a game. He is just so much more effective than some of the games he had last year, where it was only around 8 or 9 and it was just a purely shut down role.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Williams, the forward line coach, Williams talked about the need. It's something we've talked about in the past, about the need to have other people in the back line other than Hooley rebounding. And it was funny, Hooley on the meters gained statistic was sort of so by far the best player on the ground. Had 200 meters more than the second most. Yeah, it was 700 meters. The second best player was McIntosh with 500 meters. So Hooley got 14 handball receives, and I think the rest of the back line combined got 20. So, it just shows how reliant we are on Hooley. But it's nice to see Batch bob up in that role. So, it was a good start. Hopefully he can sort of – because he needs to get mid-teens positions because he's not that good defensively.
No, look, he's on a two-year contract, and I feel better about it after seeing this game.
Yeah, that's true. Who else stood out to you?
Look, we've mentioned the forward line and how well it worked, but after the first quarter, where we were getting dominated in midfield, our defence was just on top, winning all of the one-on-ones, and it was really functioning as a unit that was very encouraging.
It's a mature unit now. And I think that's starting to pay off. One of the most interesting debates has been the debate about the Steve Morris experiment at the forward line. How did you read it?
Well, look, 3 disposals is woeful. I looked at it again on the tape, and he did at least create a lot of contests. So I think the coaches would have been happy about that. That was one of the things that drove me nuts last season, was the number of times the ball had come into the Richmond forward line and the other team would sweep it away easily. And at least he created a lot of 50-50 contests, which is useful. It's just, if he's not winning any of them, I don't know. Dan Butler kicked a couple of goals in the VFL, and he's a tackling machine as well.
I just like the credit to the internet. There's a lot of people being quite complimentary on Morris's game. The thing, flogging the dead horse about his attacking capabilities, he gets on tram tracks. So the Steve Morris Express comes charging through the contest. He hits it really hard. But he's not very skillful, so the ball, more often than not, the ball gets left behind him, which, basically means you're playing a man down, as, Steve Morris is, has the turning circle of the Titanic. And so he's not great. And a few times, Yaron Yaron just hang back, let Morris go flying past, and then went on a merry waltz through the middle of their grounds. I think he's chasing. Now, I know he made that fantastic chase that caused the turnover just before halftime in front of the cheer squad, which is a great way to reinforce your fans. You know, he's already pretty popular amongst some fans. But I don't think his chasing's that good. Like, I think because he's got the blonde hair and he's noticeable with his chasing. But no, realistically, his best chase was no better than, even Lloyd made a really nice chase during the game. And, you know, the best chase I saw all game was, Edwards running down Jarvin, as he was coming into goal. I think, like, he's so bad on the attacking end. You've got to be just beyond the least on, at chasing. And he's not. And one problem is he doesn't have an enormous tank, so he puts all his effort into his chase, and then if you watch him, he's done for 30 to 60 seconds because he's absolutely gassed. So I feel a bit bad hacking on someone who had three possessions so hard, but I was distinctly underwhelmed. But I will say credit to there's been a nice nuanced debate on Richmond fan forums. So credit to people for seeing his good defensive work.
I'd keep him in the team for at least for this week. But we'll talk about that when we get to the Bulldogs.
Yeah, actually, so would I. And the last thing I'll mention about this game, because I don't want to harp on it now, but I dropped Newman like a stone. But we can cover
well,
that.
Look,
in
the... Well, why don't we cover that now? Look, the one it was an inexplicable selection decision, given he hadn't played a NAB Cup game and had heart, albeit minor, heart surgery. The only aspect...
And you know, and was probably one of our bottom three players in the team towards the end of the year last year.
He was 18th in the best and fairest on a votes per game basis. So yeah, he's pretty fringe, and he's still very fringe. The only defensible part about it is, on the club podcast last week, Richo refused to rule him out because, you know, he'd been training really well, and that's sort of the one thing that we don't get to see, is how well a guy's going on the track, particularly when they've had a week off in between games. But yeah, look, I think what can be charitably said is that the structure of the team is pretty set, and it's only there's a fluid couple of positions on the forward and back flanks. So Newman, Gordon, Lloyd, Morris. Like there's four guys there who's I think are the only ones who are not really well established in the team.
So it took Newman with 5 minutes left in the second quarter to hit a teammate with one of his passes. He was a dead man walking in any contested ball situation. He was run down. He looked slow. He looked like the game had gone past him. I thought it was a terrible way to send, you know, like who's essentially been the heart and soul. Everything I hear about Newman off the field is he's been sort of the emotional heart and soul of the club for the last 8 years. He was sitting out of a position where, frankly, he looked awful. And look, he was our worst player on the weekend. Morris gave more, so did Gordon. Your worst player on your team should be someone who's young, learning the position. And if we want to get to a position where, you know, we finish higher than seventh, the story about Richmond being a top four side involves someone like Ben Lennon learning the game plan and learning how to get to the right positions and playing better footy, because Lennon has upside, Newman has none. That was an opportunity. Every game we play Newman ahead of Lennon or someone like that is an opportunity. And I know Newman knows the game plan. I presume that's why he's getting played. It's a missed opportunity to get Lennon up or someone else who might actually help us win a final up to scratch. And this hurts me so much to say, but, you know, the path to winning finals isn't through Chris Newman. So that's the most negative thing I'll say. And I do recognize what a great person he's been for the football team, but I didn't like that at all, how we treated him. And he should play games this year, but he should play games not when you've got three or four young guys who are quite talented, who at the very worst won't be any worse than, you know, in worst case scenario, won't be any worse than what Newman was on the weekend. But that's pretty negative, Nick. Let's talk about Marich.
Yeah, it is pretty negative. Look, the one thing last year that and people were critical of some of the selection decisions. Part of the problem was not having sort of the next group of guys like Lennon really knocking the door down for selection. And I do think, look, I am deeply fond of Lennon, but I do think we need to remember that he's had an interrupted preseason, and he's not a mammothly good runner in the first place. So I do think we need to relax a little bit on expectations for this year, at least.
And that might be the case, it might be next year, but you just described Newman perfectly, and Newman's 32 years old. And
yeah, but he's a better runner than Lennon. Lennon, you know,
I mean, Newman, I don't want to hack on Newman, but he's never been a top five in his best and fairest, his whole career, even in his prime. Look, he's been a great off-the-field leader, but this is not good for his legacy to keep playing him like this. It's not respecting what Newman has built. Newman has helped build us a better club, and sending him out in games like that is setting him up to fail. And there were, in our VFL team, there were several veteran players, and, you know, players who still have some ability to contribute on a higher level who could have contributed on the weekend. But let's not over-debate.
We'll talk about that in the VFL. The last one I wanted to mention was Big Ibby, who frankly did his customary thing. Like, Cam Wood, actually, you're saying about Warnock being out. Actually, Cam Wood was being selected ahead of him towards the end of last year, and he's for all the well-founded jokes about him, he is still big.
I think Warnock was nursing an injury, because Warnock is sort of... the best of Warnock is better than the best of Cam Wood.
And Marich really did start to dominate him in the second half. It was a very Marich performance.
It was. It was the not giving up, but towards the end he bossed him. But he won on points. He didn't. It wasn't a knockout.
No, it wasn't a knockout.
Okay. So yes, VFL.
Well, the seniors was a very encouraging effort. Like we've already mentioned, you know, there's a couple of guys whose spots in the team probably can't taken for granted. But look, there's only one guy who from the weekend who's really put his hand up for senior selection, and that's Chris Knights.
Well, I mean, both Lambert, Pettard, and Madonna and Knights were competent.
Knights
at a VFL level, and
Knights having, you know, 28 disposals, 9 inside 50s, 4 clearances. Like it, building on it, for him, it's just getting a continuity of football where he's physically up to playing senior football. Because we saw in the Bulldogs NAB Cup game, like when his body's feeling right, which is a huge if, he's certainly of senior standard. So that was very encouraging. Yeah, as you mentioned, some other guys had pretty decent games as well, with Lambert, Madonna, Pettard. So it was an encouraging, if not overwhelming, performance.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact. George Constanza, had two touches, lots of good rushed, and Lennon kicked a few goals and took some nice contested marks. You do wonder if a few of the guys in the seniors, how well they play if they had to play in the VFL, and, you know, what is frankly not a very good team with no VFL-listed players, actually do.
Yeah, the standard of our VFL-listed players does seem pretty weak. Corey Ellis, VFL... Well,
yeah, that's a really good point. Had 16 touches, looked smooth.
And that's very much the word home. As a smooth-moving left-footed midfielder, I'm slightly disappointed that Camden McIntosh has number 33.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought you were referring to yourself there briefly, but...
No.
Sorry for the fact you weren't smooth or left-footed.
Other than that, I mentioned him before, but briefly, but I've got half an eye on Daniel Butler as well. He was a tackling machine in the TSC Cup last year, and if he's he needs to put on weight for senior football, but if he can get on the scoreboard regularly, that's one to look out for.
Absolutely. I mean, if he gets on the scoreboard regularly, and he's got more running, he's got more natural ability, running ability than Morris, that's pretty exciting. I should say one thing in defense of Morris, that the coaches did say that he makes the other players chase harder, and he is elite, so you can see a bit of that, but, you know, as you say, Butler copies Morris's his attitude towards the game. You know, he could go flying past him in a few months because he has other qualities. I think that's it for the VFL. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, look, they start their season proper this week, which is good to see. Sadly, only one goal for my boy McBean, because, well, I suppose we should mention that Ty Vickery limped off in the second quarter with a knee injury. They're sort of hoping for the best, that there's not structural damage, but even if it's not a full ligament tear, he could be out for a while, which makes, frankly, Liam McBean one injury away, one Ben Griffiths injury away from senior football.
Nick, are you rubbing your hands?
Yes.
I tell you what, Karma has not been Ty Vickery's friend ever since he knocked out Cox.
No, very so.
But, yeah, look, it's a shame for Ty. But it's kind of interesting because it does feel like, you know, we're playing Lloyd, we're playing Morris, we're playing Gordon in our forward line at the moment. It does feel like you could fit someone else in there who, you know, potentially could get the ball more than 15 times a game. So there is, which Ty can do, by the way. It does feel like that there is a spot there for Ty if things had come together, but, obviously, he's going to be up for a while. And McDonald, it was interesting. McDonald got quite a bit of the ball. I presume he was playing in the midfield, but
playing in the midfield.
But he has to be sort of worth a second thought. Before we get on to the Bulldogs, let's just briefly talk about selection for us. So, I mean, obviously, I put my colours up the flagpole. As far as I could tell, Newman wasn't playing in the back line.
He was a bit in the. In the third quarter, I definitely noticed him on a back flank. But.
Oh, that's fair enough. But, you know, I don't think it would be outrageous to sub Newman for Knights. Is there any sort of changes you'd like to see?
Well, I'd keep Steve Morris in just to play him on Bob Murphy.
Yeah, I find the Morris experiment, they've invested a lot in it. I don't mind keeping with it for a few more weeks.
And Murphy really is important. They've... Talking about the Bulldogs, they have...
Yeah, you can really notice that when you watch them.
They're a donut team. The way... one of the sort of unpleasant things about the AFL is that, you know, the clubs like the Bulldogs towards the bottom of the ladder, sort of their prime age players are just massive targets for other clubs. So Sean Higgins goes as a free agent to North Melbourne, Ryan Griffin as a trade to the Giants. Like, it just hollows out that mid-20s core of players, of which they have virtually no one. They've got their long-standing 30-something gun players like Matthew Boyd, Bob Murphy, Morris, been around a long time, Will Minson. And then there's a crop of some really good younger players, and there's not much in between.
Yeah, exactly. It's bizarre. They're best on the weekend. I had a 32-year-old, and what's Bontempelli right now?
He's about 20,
21.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's the hot young thing in the AFL right now, but, yeah, they've... have sort of got the, as you say, they've got a big gap between their best and their worst. But
I've said it before last year when previewing a Bulldogs game. If Jackson McRae played for Essendon, like he'd be, his photo would be on the side of trams. Like he's a fantastic young footballer.
Ripped off 30 again at a very young age on the weekend. I do wonder, you know, they did look good against the... They dominated the Eagles. The scoreline very much flattered the Eagles. I do wonder whether sort of there's an Etihad effect that sort of can be a bit flattering because you look so, you know, everything's faster and more skilled at Etihad. So I do wonder, like, they looked really good on the weekend, like, you know, sort of top 10 AFL material, but I do wonder whether that was a bit of an optical illusion.
Well, the bookmakers were very lukewarm in their impressions. So we started off before the Bulldogs played, we were 18.5-point favourites, and after they played, we were 17.5-point favourites. So it didn't make much of a difference in their eyes.
Yeah, and... In some ways, you'd think we're a little bit unders because, you know, we're a top eight team playing a bottom four team who's lost their best player to a nasty injury. But, they lost their best player to a nasty injury and they lost their second best player the year in the off season to free agency. Also trade, sorry. You do wonder why we're not more favoured, and it's at the G. So I don't think there's any argument that we match up badly against the Bulldogs because generally, other than that awful game last year, we've handled them fairly easily over the last few years. So look,
I think it was the year before.
Sorry, no, we lost them last year at Etihad.
Oh, that's true. But
before then, we'd had a pretty good record against in the Hardwick era. They're a team we played really well against,
and particularly at the MCG. I love some of the young players. We've mentioned McRae, Jake Stringer's a big talented boy in their forward line. Tom Boyd, you know, 3 or 4 years will be extremely good. Cramery's a good third forward, but frankly, their forward line, I just feel like our defence has enough depth to cope with what they've got up forward, and the reverse doesn't apply. Like I think they were one of the worst teams last year for defending in one-on-one contests inside 50. I think we're pretty good at winning inside 50s up forward. So with an equal amount of ball, I'm very confident that we'd be able to win.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that's a bit food for thought about, you know, things we might worry about is that, I mean, Lids will almost certainly get rubbed out. And
that's a shame.
I'm a bit worried about his injury, too. Dimmer said afterwards it was a plan. They always plan to sub at the end of the game. Presumably, I don't know what the plan was if he got injured, but... he's either, so he'll probably get rubbed up by the tribunal either, so we don't need to worry about his injury, but that's a cause for concern. You know, we've lost Conker. Lord knows when he'll be back, but I suspect he won't come straight back in. Well, why would you bring him straight back in when you've got, you know, a couple of mids playing in the VFL?
Just on that, surely Knights is a one for one replacement for Lids. Just be a question. Like, if you're thinking of dropping Newman, it'd be Pettard. I think Pettard, frankly, is it.
Well, I'd pick Lloyd because I mean you're picking Newman because he knows the game plan. He's a good leader.
In terms of guys to come into the team.
I'd actually because Pettard wasn't great.
He was. 24 disposals.
He was, which is more than Lennon, but Lennon only played forward, and, you know, it's harder to play forward.
And a couple of goals. Oh, sorry, you mentioned Lloyd before. I sort of just go off the emergencies as a sort of thinking about who's in the selectors' minds, and it was Vickery, Pettard, and Lambert. So, you know, Lambert and Pettard have both had decent games, so you would think it had come from one of those two.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, the other way you could do it is, because Knights, Lord knows how few years, is replace Lids with Pettard. But I think you're right that Knights is more of a Lids type player because he plays sort of through the he's a half forward who plays through the midfield, whereas Lambert is more of a slightly more forward player, as far as I can tell thus far in his career. I quite like Lennon to come in for Newman, actually, to some games to Lennon, because I think he's the man. But I'd be quite happy with Pettard. The only thing I wouldn't be happy with if they kept Newman in the team. And that sounds horrible because I quite like Newman as a human being and for his legacy at Richmond. I'm actually disturbingly confident for this game, which will probably end in tears for me. How are you feeling?
So it's a week before the game, and like, I'm feeling pretty relaxed and comfortable now. But I'm sure over the week I'll get more stressed and anxious about the game, and that's normally how it works.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll probably talk myself into being worried. But right now, I'm weirdly confident. I should just mention, Nick, we've got some really good emails over the last few weeks. Mm. If you haven't got the email. I reply, and Nick does too sometimes, to every email we get. So if you haven't got a reply from us, it's because it's been blocked by your spam filter. So sorry about that. Not our fault. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Richmond Tiger Talk. And that's it from me, Nick.
Mm. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. I'm Andy.
I used to love the roar of the crowd. The mark taken by Roy Hart there. A fake kick is being inside. He gets inside. Well inside. And anywhere that you bring a seat, just think.